Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday evening. Lynn said we have great news, so maybe she wants me to announce again that Awakening Together has received church status. Some of you may have heard that this morning. Some of you may have seen that in email today. But we did apply for church status a year ago in December of 2014. In July of 2015, we heard back from them, and in fact, what they were saying was, unless you have a physical place of worship, you cannot be a church. But that was not a final decision. We had a chance to respond back to them. We sent them an entire box full of documents to show that we were a church, including a legal argument written by Jacqueline Eckert, including around 40 letters from you, saying that Awakening Together was your church of choice. And just last week, we got a letter from them saying that we were approved and that we are now legally a church in the United States of America. So that's nice. We can put that behind us now and move forward. That is done. But welcome to Seven Steps to Awakening. That's what I'm going to do now. I'm going to be sharing with you from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, Step 3, reading quotes out of the book. Might do a little bit of sharing based on the quotes. And then I will also be sharing from my journal. When I contemplated these quotes, I wrote in my journal, and I will be sharing from the journal. The journal that I'm sharing from right now was written in January of 2013. So nearly 3 years ago, so it's kind of fun for me to go back and look at it as well. Before we get started, I would like to just have a little bit of stillness time, and I like to do that to music. So I'm going to play a song by Audrey Assad, and this song is called Ought to Be.
I love you more than a snow falling silver rain, more than a silence that only the snow leaves behind. I love you more, and I love you better than the gray of the autumn air, better than spring in its blooming against the sky. I love you more. It may not be red as a rose is yet. It may not be strong as the old oak trees, but I've planted it deeply becomes what it ought to be. Your love is steady and sure as a mountain's high, moving my heart like a river that gently bends. Your love is sure. Your love is wide open spaces where I can run, and yet we're tangled up loose in the warm broken earth. Our love is sure, and it may not be clear as the morning yet. It may not be white as the restless sea, but love given freely becomes what it ought to be. Clear as the morning, yet it may not be white as a restless sea, and it may not be red as the roses get. It may not be strong as the old oak trees, but love planted deeply becomes what it ought to, and hearts given freely become what they ought to, and love planted deeply becomes. to see.
All right, lovely. So tonight I'm going to begin the Seven Steps to Awakening with quote number 693 from Step 3. This quote is from the Yoga Vasistha, and this is the quote. For a very long time, this ghost of a mind generated countless evil notions, like lust, anger, etc. Now that the ghost has been laid, I laugh at my own past foolishness. The mind is dead. All my worries and anxieties are dead. The demon, known as ego sense, is dead. And you might remember last week we looked at another Yoga Vasistha quote that said, mind and movement of thought are inseparable. So when the Yoga Vasistha says that mind is dead, it means that movement of thought, which we call chatter, that chatter has ceased. That's what that appears to mean. It also talks about in this particular quote, the demon known as the ego sense is dead. And a couple weeks ago, somebody asked me what the ego is. And there are different definitions for the word ego. So when I speak of the ego, when I speak of the ego, I am referring to that feeling of a me that is distinct and separate from everything else. I told my friend that the ego sense is the sense that from the skin in is me, and everything outside of the skin is not me. So like even the clothes on the body are not me. Everything else is not me. That is the ego sense. And this particular quote says, the demon known as the ego sense is dead. And of course this happened because the mind is dead. So what this really means is that the ego sense comes from the mind. We all hear and we all even feel. We don't just hear, we feel the sense that the body is me. In fact, when I described the ego sense, I said everything from the skin in is me. That's the ego sense. And so a lot of us get this idea that it is because of the body that we feel a sense of separation. And I used to believe that too. I used to think because of the body, if I just wasn't in a body, I wouldn't feel separate. But as I have gone into contemplation and looked very deeply at what causes that sense of separation, what I found is that it isn't the body. It's the mind. It's even in the mind where the I am a body idea exists. And in fact, if it wasn't for the mind, the experience of a body possibly could still be here without that sense of separation. It would be seen as a part of all that is. So it isn't really the body as much that's an obstacle as it's the mind that is the obstacle. And again, the mind does have the I am the body idea in it, but that idea is in the mind. Again, this quote says, for a very long time, this ghost of a mind generated countless evil notions like lust, anger, etc. Now that that ghost has been laid, I laugh at my own past foolishness. The mind is dead. All my worries and anxieties are dead. The demon known as the ego sense is dead. In my particular case, I definitely would not say that the mind is dead or that the demon known as the ego sense is dead. But at the very same time, I also cannot say that it's as solid as it was when I began this spiritual path. I can tell the difference. I can tell that there's a difference. I can, well, the one primary difference that I can really notice is the mind itself. You know, this talks about evil notions like lust and anger. and then it says, etc. I know that my mind used to have all kinds of stories in it, all kinds of interpretations, all kinds of stories, and it was spinning all day long with grievances, thoughts of attack and defense, thoughts of unworthiness and blame, thoughts of fear. And now I notice that the mind, my mind, the way I experience the mind, it doesn't seem to do that anymore. Every now and then a little thought will pass, you know, a little thought will show up, that is a really strong kind of dark separation thought, you know, maybe a thought about someone else or something like that. But what happens when those types of thoughts show up now is I just turn my attention to it. Not the type of attention that gets sucked into the thought and starts believing it, but the type of attention that isn't interested in it. And this attention has a healing light to it. And so knowing that I'm not interested in getting sucked into that kind of thinking and just turning my attention and kind of looking at it kind of just makes it, you know, just dissolve, like the Wicked Witch of the West dissolved when Dorothy threw a bucket of water on her. So that attention that I turn on it is like the bucket of water that dissolves the thought. And so nothing gets to live, nothing like that, nothing that's dark like that gets to live in my mind. It's interesting because right now the world, or the United States anyway, is really captured by the fact that a new Star Wars came out. And I went my entire life without seeing Star Wars, without having any interest in Star Wars. But my boyfriend wanted to really go see this new one and wanted me to go with him. And so one of the things I've done in the last few weeks is I've seen all of the previous Star Wars, all six of them. And today I went and saw the seventh. So I am no longer a Star Wars virgin. I have seen the Star Wars. But what was, of course, interesting to me about the Star Wars, the most interesting character to me, well, of course, I loved Yoda, but the most interesting character to me was Anakin or Darth Vader. And that is because you could see spiritual teaching at work there. You could see that as Anakin focused on his attachments, on wanting things his way, as he focused on thoughts of power, as he focused on jealousy, anger, you could see how he got drawn in deeper and deeper into what they call the dark side of the Force. And I thought, you know, that's just truth there. If we allow ourselves to get sucked into these stories of grievance, jealousy, whatever, then it very much becomes a part of our experience. But if we know that we aren't interested in those ideas, really know, just I know I'm not interested. I don't want my mind filled with that kind of trash. I'm reminded now of the movie Peaceful Warrior, where Socrates told Dan Millman to take the trash out, right? Meaning the thoughts and the mind. Take the trash out. If I notice that I'm just not interested in that kind of trash, I really just don't want that darkness. It's amazing how easy it is to just look at the thought, see it for what it is, realize you don't want it, just kind of look at it a little bit with that realization, and it, like the Wicked Witch of the West, it just kind of melts, and then you go on. You know, and what will sometimes happen to me is I'll be in a conversation with someone, and they'll be talking about something they were struggling with or something, and I'll say, oh, yeah, I remember. I had a thought cross my mind this morning. I remember. I paused and looked at it. But gosh, I can't even remember what the thought was now. But I do remember the act of pausing and looking at it and knowing that I didn't want that thought. But, you know, it just melted and died, and I can't even tell you what the thought was. It's blessed forgetfulness. You know, it didn't even stick enough for me to be able to tell you what it is. Again, quote 693 says, for a very long time, this ghost of a mind generated countless evil notions like lust, anger, etc. Now that that ghost has been laid, I laugh at my own past foolishness. The mind is dead. All my worries and anxieties are dead. The demon known as ego sense is dead. So let me look at my journal and see what I wrote in the journal as I contemplated this. Oh, wait, I don't think I've given you guys the link to the journal yet. I typically do that just in case anybody wants to follow along. So, yeah, I see Lynn is reminding me, just as I was thinking of it, yeah. There you go. All right. It is freeing to know one is not one's thoughts. When one is identified with thought, there is a bodily contraction that occurs in relation to some thoughts. And then there is a desire to escape the discomfort of that contraction. And this leads to egoic action. When one does not identify with thoughts, there is no contraction, no desire to escape discomfort, and no egoic action. There may be thoughts, but they are meaningless and result in no manifestation at any level. That is freedom. So what I just now described in talking about my own experience is how you know, I'm going to call it a dark thought, but this could just because I just finished watching, you know, 7 episodes of Star Wars, so now I'm all about the dark side. But yeah, I'll go ahead and use that symbol of dark thoughts. I think we all know what I'm talking about. So I just finished describing that process where when a dark thought arises, I know I am not interested. I know I don't want to go back to that way of thinking. I know I don't want to hold a grievance against anyone for anything. I know that. I know I do not want to judge and hate myself and feel that sick, sick feeling of unworthiness. I know that I don't want to control my daughter or control my boyfriend or control anything else and have that pressure of having to be in control. I know all of this. I've learned from experience. I had pain, and then I had peace, and then I had pain again. And that was enough to teach me which one I liked better. I'm not an idiot. I found that I liked the peace better. I found that I liked happiness better. I found that I liked the freedom better, the feeling of freedom better. And I also found that there were certain thoughts that took that away from me. And so I'm not interested, no matter what story the ego tells, no matter how justified it appears, I'm just not interested. Completely bored with the dark side, literally. And so when you're completely bored with those ideas, you know, let's say somebody says something about you. Let's say they say something about you in Facebook, right there in social media where the whole world can see it. And let's say other people jump in, maybe some defending you, some agreeing, some taking it even darker. You know what happens in Facebook. If you are completely bored with pain, even if that conversation appears to be about you or your name is in it, you actually know at this point it's not about you. but your name is in it. They think they're talking about you. They don't know they're talking about their own thoughts. You have no interest in the conversation. The fact that it appears to be about you is irrelevant, because if you had any interest in the conversation at all, you would pull yourself back into the pain, back into the dark side. And because you know that you love peace, what is it that A Course in Miracles says? To say I want the peace of God is nothing. To mean it is everything. Because you know that you prefer peace, because you have learned from your own experience that you like peace and happiness and freedom, and you're not interested in pain, you now have no interest in that conversation. Those people can go on and they can, you know, comment back and forth as long as they want. You know, your little notifications may go off, but you find, oh, it's that conversation. I don't even, you know, I got other things to do. Like, it's just not important to me, right? It's boring. It's meaningless. It's not what I want. You know, if Anakin in Star Wars had felt that way when dark thoughts arose, he would have never ended up Darth Vader, but then we wouldn't have had, you know, episode 4, 5, and 6. And when I say that it's boring, when I say I'm not interested in even looking at the conversation, I mean, I saw enough of it to know what it was and enough of it to know that it was boring. Enough of it to know that I was not interested. When I say that, one way that you can tell that you're genuine in that is that there's no inner contraction. If there's some kind of an inner contraction, you're like, ugh, a little stab of pain, and then you're afraid to look at the conversation, that's different. That's not boredom. That's still investment. That's still investment. So one of the things to really pay attention to is there a contraction here? Is there some kind of a bodily reaction? You know, that's a good clue as to whether you are invested or not, whether you are identified with the thought or not. And if there is a bodily contraction, then there's probably also going to be a desire to escape the discomfort of that contraction. And as this journal entry says, that leads to egoic action. Now, egoic action in this case could be avoiding looking at the conversation because I'm afraid of it, but it's still spinning in my mind the parts I did see, right? I now have grievances against the people who are talking about me, what I think is me. Or another egoic action could be to go in there, start defending myself, start trying to get people to see my point of view, see that they're wrong, I'm right. Or another egoic action could be to call up a friend and talk to that friend about the people that are in Facebook and get the friend to join on my side, at least, even if we never do anything in Facebook, at least see it my way and see how I'm the good guy here and they're the bad guys. You know, some type of egoic action. Even if, again, if it's doing nothing but the thoughts are spinning in the mind, the grievances are spinning in the mind. And that all came, again, because I identified with thought. Whatever thought occurred when I looked at the conversation in Facebook, I identified with that thought. I believed, in this case, they were talking about me, who I am. I felt a contraction. I felt pain. I wanted to avoid pain. And so I did something to try and escape the pain. Whether it was joining in the conversation or running from the conversation, it's the same. But if I don't identify with the thoughts, now this is an important little detail. It says if I don't identify with the thoughts, what thought is it talking about? It's talking about the thought in my mind. Whatever thought would appear in my mind when my eyes see the conversation, right? Did I identify with that thought? And what's really interesting is when it talks about identifying with thoughts, let me correct that, because I don't know how to finish that sentence in the way I want to say it. If there is a thought and I identify with it, there will be a contraction. If there is a thought, I see that thought, I realize I'm not interested in that thought, I don't want to go down that slide, and I just look at it with that awareness, I'm not interested in this, until it melts like the Wicked Witch of the West, there is no contraction, and there is no egoic action. Now, what's interesting about that is in both scenarios, there could be a thought. You know, some people think that there shouldn't be a thought. Like if I look at the conversation and I have a thought, somehow I'm guilty. What does identifying with a thought mean? You could call it believing the thought. Yeah, you could call it believing the thought. Thinking the thought has meaning. So some people have the misperception that there shouldn't be a thought at all. And so as soon as they see a thought, just because they think there shouldn't be a thought, they identify with the thought, out of fear that it's there. You know, like let's say that there's a conversation happening in Facebook and there's a girlfriend of mine in it and there's a thought that crosses the mind. How dare she say that about me, right? Or why, you know, she should know me better than that or something like that, right? If I think I shouldn't even see those thoughts in the mind and then it's there, then I identify with the thought as if, ah, I shouldn't have had that thought. That's still an identification. I, you hear that? I shouldn't have had that thought. There's an identification there. And then there's going to be guilt. Maybe the judgment is against me instead of the friend in this case, but there's still a judgment, right? So when a thought shows up, the way to be free of the thought, you know, so the thought shows up, oh, you know, how could she say that about me? Shouldn't she know me better than that? I see that thought. I know where that thought is going to take me if I follow that thought. I'm not interested in going there. And then I just rest until the thought melts like the Wicked Witch of the West. You see, so it's not about not seeing thoughts. In fact, it is about seeing the thought. You see the thought and you recognize your lack of interest in the dark side. You recognize your lack of interest in turning into Darth Vader, you know, or turning into the person that's walking around with grievances spinning in her head. You recognize you don't want to go there. To say you want the peace of God is nothing. To mean it is everything. So again, this journal entry says, it is freeing to know one is not one's thoughts. Now, one other thing I want to say is when I first started getting smart to this, when I first started realizing, because there was a point in my life when I didn't know I didn't have to believe my thoughts. A thought showed up, I believed it. A thought shows up, I believed it. And I'll get to your question in a moment, Sharon. I didn't know that I didn't have to believe my thoughts, right? So when I first started getting smart because of my contemplation to the realization that I did not have to believe my thoughts, the ego came in. This is so funny. The thought that came in was, what do you mean you don't have to believe your thoughts? Of course you have to believe your thoughts. They're yours. You know, that was the first thought I had to overcome in order to not believe my thoughts, was my mind telling me, what are you talking about? Of course you have to believe your thoughts. They're yours. And that's not true. Thoughts just arise. Thoughts just arise. I do not have to believe my thoughts. And So realizing you don't have to believe your thoughts, and then knowing what you truly want, that you really do want peace more than pain, is extremely freeing. Now, Sharon says, Regina, if someone dies and you get a contraction, does that mean you are invested? Sure. Does that mean you're guilty? No. No. Absolutely not. I mean, you know, people die all the time. People that we know die all the time. Since I've been coming here into the sanctuary, first it was ACIM Gather, a lot of people have died that I loved very much. You know, Cheryl Valentine died. Mary Ellen died. You know, many, many others died. I did not have contractions with their deaths. It's funny, I had emotion. There was this knowing, you know, oh, I'm going to miss that one. You know, the fond remembrance of the experiences with that one. But there wasn't the contraction. The contraction is a sense of resistance, a sense of it shouldn't be this way. Or I'm guilty because of this. You know, something like that. It's a judgment against. A judgment against is a contraction. So, you know, have you ever gone back to a place? Like I lived in Pittsburgh, Kansas when I was in 4th grade, 5th grade, 6th grade, and 7th grade, which for me were some pretty prime years. Like even though I moved around a lot, because I was in one town for those 4 years, that town has always felt more like my home than any other town. It was just really a primary part of my growing up. And a few years ago, I went there for a family reunion and took Jasmine back with me. And I had so much fun taking Jasmine to my old elementary school, to the park where I played at, by the house that I lived in, the church that I went to, even looking at the names of street signs and remembering it. We even went into the library, the public library, and walked around. And there was this nostalgic feeling that, you know, you could even call a bit of sadness, maybe, I mean, a little bit of sadness. But there was no lack of peace in it. There was no contraction in it. There was no, oh, I should never have had to move away from this place in it. There was no judgment in it. It was a sweet, nostalgic sadness. And if, in its own way, it was a joy. Death can be experienced that way too. When someone dies, there can be sadness, but it can be this sweet sadness. It's sadness knowing that you loved. You know, it's a sweet sadness rather than a contraction, rather than a resistance, rather than this shouldn't have happened. So when there's a contraction, a resistance, that this shouldn't have happened, we're attached to an idea, even more than the person, believe it or not. We're attached to our own idea of how things should have been, right? But again, when I say that we have these contractions, yeah, thank you, Dove, the belief that I am wrong. When we have these contractions, we don't want to make the contraction worse by then thinking I'm guilty because I'm having a contraction. And this is where spirituality gets all screwed up in our heads. Right? Spirituality gets all screwed up in our heads when we hear teachings like a contraction means there's identification with thought, or a contraction means there was attachment there, or a desire to have things your way. And so then you have a contraction, and somehow you say, oh, I'm guilty. Nobody said you were guilty for having a contraction. Nobody said you were guilty for having resistance. That's just another false idea. What we did say was you identified with a thought. You identified with a belief. And so if you realize that, the contraction itself can be the wake-up call. So, you know, whether it's because someone died or whether it's because you broke your favorite teacup or whatever. If you feel that contraction, you can look at it and go, oh, this is something I need to look at. This is something I need to be with. This is something I need to rest, accept, and trust, right? And something in you can begin to relax. The way you get to what I call the miracle of not contracting, you know, in situations where you would have before, the way you get to the miracle of not contracting is by resting, accepting, and trusting with the contractions that do come. Instead of calling yourself guilty, you rest into it. You accept how you feel. You trust this is healing. Again, it doesn't matter if it's a contraction because of a death, or if it's a contraction because you broke your favorite teacup, or a contraction because somebody said something about you in Facebook. If you rest, accept, and trust into that, at some point, a healing happens to where you start noticing the contraction isn't there. You can't force yourself to not have a contraction. You can't force yourself to not resist, or force yourself to not identify with a thought, or force yourself to not believe a thought. You can't do that. What you can notice is that you are doing it. Realize that that you want to rest and let this be healed. And then at some point, you'll hit the point where, again, a similar type of idea will show up. You'll look at it, you'll say, you know what, I just don't want to go back to the pain. I'm not interested in playing this game. I'm not interested in the dark side. And you'll be able to look at it until it dies, till it melts like the Wicked Witch of the West. One of the things I've been doing here in the sanctuary lately is teaching another series on Wednesdays called The Guiding Light. And in The Guiding Light, I'm reading the Bible and just sharing with you how my mind reads the Bible, because there's an automatic interpretation when I read the Bible. Just, I guess it started happening when I scribed in TI. I learned to listen to that right mind, and now it just happens automatically. When I read the Bible, it's interpreting it for me. It's spontaneous and simultaneous. Spontaneous and simultaneous. And in The Guiding Light, one of the things we've been looking at in the early parts of the book of John is how purification is necessary before pure awareness rises into consciousness. And purification is the letting go of false beliefs, attachments, values, things like that. And the way that you let go is the rest, accept, and trust. That is letting go. So, you know, when you notice that a false belief is kicking in again and you're getting angry again, or a value is kicking in again, or an attachment is kicking in again, you rest, accept, and trust. You just rest. And sometimes you have to rest with some very difficult things. I know I had to. With things that your mind tells you, if you don't do something about this, you're going to suffer in some way. Somebody's going to die. I had to look at stories where my mind was telling me if I didn't do something, somebody was going to die. Literally. That's what my mind was telling me. You're going to end up homeless. You know, your mind can get pretty dang drastic. And what I had to do is want healing more than anything else. That was the only way that I was able to rest, accept, and trust through these incredible stories that you have to understand appeared real to me at the time. Even though no one ever died and I never ended up homeless, at the time these stories appeared real. I mean, I literally thought at one point someone was going to kill me. I literally thought at one point that someone was going to kill my daughter. And I, of course, thought we were going to end up homeless as the money was running out. And these are things I had to rest, accept, and trust, because I knew it was my crazy mind talking. I didn't know for sure these situations weren't going to happen, but I knew I had to get out of my crazy mind. So I rest, accepted, and trusted. And what happened by going through this purification phase, this rest, accept, and trust with all kinds of incredible situations and incredible stories, is that at some point, this pure awareness arose into consciousness. And it's this pure awareness that I'm talking about that is able to just look at a thought, at the birth of the thought, knowing that there's no interest in the thought, and the thought gently dies. But I had to go through the purification first. In fact, I would say that looking at a thought, knowing that you're just not interested in a thought, and having that thought die, melt like the Wicked Witch of the West, that's a miracle. And A Course in Miracles says, a miracle is everyone's right, but purification is necessary first. So if someone is listening to this and you still have all kinds of crazy thoughts about, you know, grievances about other people, worries about your future, ideas that you are unworthy or guilty or the scum of the earth, these are all crazy thoughts. Normal in this world, but crazy. If you still have those crazy thoughts all of the time, you probably have contractions all of the time, all day long. Somebody says something, you contract. You read something in Facebook, you contract. A thought crosses your mind about a potential future for you or your children, and you contract. It probably happens all the time. And it's extremely possible, in fact, I would bet my money on it, that you haven't yet gone through the purification phase. And so this is what you want to be learning to do. Every time you feel that contraction, you want to move into rest, accept, and trust. Breathe, right? And then at some point, this pure awareness that I'm talking about that knows, oh, I'm just not interested in that, and can look at it and let it die, at some point that will arise. But if your path is anything like mine, you might not be able to do that yet. Because there really is, to be honest, still way too much believing and way too much identification happening. And rest, accept, and trust is the way to transcend that. So one thing that I recommend to everyone is know where you are at. And be honest with yourself. Oh my God, be honest with yourself. One of the biggest illnesses in the spiritual community is the illness of pretending I'm more spiritually advanced than I am. Lying to myself. That is a huge illness. Don't do that. It doesn't serve you in any way. What serves you best is to be completely honest with yourself. You don't have to go around telling everybody else if you don't want to. But you do need to be completely honest with yourself. So if you know that you still have these contractions all day long, thoughts that you resist, sights that you resist, sounds that you resist, feelings that you resist, right? Then just start becoming a master of rest, accept, and trust. That's the only thing you need to be doing right now. And it's okay to listen to teachings about other things because you know what? At some point, you're going to be ready for those other things. But just practice rest, accept, and trust right now, right? Because that's what's going to get you ready for other things. Now, this particular journal entry says it is freeing to know one is not one's thoughts. When one is identified with thought, there is a bodily contraction that occurs in relation to some thoughts, and then there is a desire to escape the discomfort of that contraction, and then this leads to egoic action. When one does not identify with thoughts, there is no contraction, no desire to escape discomfort, and no egoic action. There may be thoughts, but they are meaningless and result in no manifestation at any level. This is freedom. So this is talking about two different situations. Either, you know, there's the contraction phase is happening, and if you're believing it, it results in egoic action on your part. Or maybe you've completely transcended that, and there's no contraction, there's no egoic action, because you're not at all identified with thoughts. The bridge from one shore to the other is rest, accept, and trust. All right, that's the bridge from one shore to the other. And although I know that what I'm about to say is very difficult to do, I'm going to say it anyway. Never judge yourself. Never judge yourself. There's just no value in it. Now I know that the judgment is probably going to happen for many people anyway because that's a habit. But when it does, look at it and remember that I said, never judge yourself, and just use that to realize you don't have to take your own judgment of yourself seriously. You can start letting that go too. It's just not necessary. Think of a small child learning to walk. Imagine if every time they fell, they judged themselves. They would never get anywhere. And, you know, when we have the habit of resistance, the habit of judgment, it's almost like learning to walk again, learning not to have that habit. And so when you judge yourself again or you judge a situation again, just see that as falling down. And then just have the willingness to try again, to get back up and try again. And again, always rest, accept, and trust with everything that arises as a contraction. That's, you don't need to know anything else. People say, how do I let go? You rest, accept, and trust. And different teachers will say the same thing with different words. But if you listen to them, they're saying the same thing. Let's see. Paul says, the most serious lying is when we know perfectly well that we do not and cannot know the truth about things and yet never act accordingly. We always think and act as though we knew the truth. This is lying. When I know that I do not know something, at the same time say that I know or act as though I know it, it is lying. Yeah. Of course, I'm talking about something a little different here. Maybe. I'm talking just about lying to ourselves about how, for lack of a better word, spiritually evolved we are. And that's just another trick of the ego to make sure that we don't transcend the place that we are now. Are you rephrasing? Okay. Yeah, and don't judge the judgment, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I don't know who Megaluna is, but Megaluna, I remember, again, back when I started this stuff, it's so funny because I would judge, then I would judge myself for judging, and then I would even judge myself for judging that I judged. I mean, oh my God, I was, you know, you look something like this. Like maybe I judge a person for whatever. Then I would judge me for judging the person. And then I would remember, oh, I'm not supposed to judge myself. And I would judge myself for judging myself. So I literally had to start. It sounds crazy, but it's true. And maybe some of you guys recognize this. I literally had to start 3 judgments back. I had to start accepting that I judged myself for judging myself, for judging. That's where my acceptance started, 3 judgments back. And then at some point, the miracle happened where I wasn't judging myself for judging myself, for judging. Whew. Finally, I got to where there were only 2 judgments back. And then I got to where there was only 1 judgment back. And then I got to where a judgment thought shows up. I look at it and realize I don't want it. You know, it all kind of happened for me in phases. But the way the phases happened, or the way the process happened, was by being where I was. So since I started with judging myself for judging myself for judging, that's where I had to start. Right? You got to start where you're at the beginning of the yellow brick road. It's always best to start at the beginning, the Witch of the North said. All right, tell you what, why don't we go ahead and move on? This is a fun conversation, but let's move on to 694. 694 in the 7 Steps to Awakening says, when the mind ceases to be, the craving ceases to be too. When the mind is dead and the craving is dead, delusion has vanished and egolessness is born. Hence, I am awakened in this state of wakefulness. And he says the craving. And, you know, I don't really know exactly what is meant by the craving. What my intuition says when I ask within, what is the craving? It's the craving to be me. The craving to be distinct. The craving for there to be a me. Now, of course, there are other cravings that come out of that. You know, like the me craves to be liked, or the me craves to be rich, or the me craves to eat lots and lots of good food, or whatever. But first, there has to be a me. So that's probably the primary craving, right? The craving just for me. A distinct me. So when the mind ceases to be, the craving ceases to be too. When the mind is dead and the craving is dead, delusion has vanished and egolessness is born. Egolessness. Egolessness can't be present if there's still a craving for me. But if the craving for me has died, then egolessness can be born. Hence, I am awakened in this state of wakefulness. So I'm going to look at 694 in the journal. Oh, here we go. I came to the same conclusion in 2013. What is the primary craving of the ego? To be somebody. It wants to identify itself as I am this. In your experience as a person, has the ego been able to claim, I am this? And then you could fill in this with anything specific. So you could ask, has the ego ever been able to claim, I am stupid? Yeah, probably for all of us at some point, right? Has the ego ever been able to claim, I am smart? Every one of us at some point. Has the ego ever been able to claim, I am clumsy? Yeah, probably every one of us. Has the ego ever been able to claim, I am skilled at something? Yes, probably every one of us. You see, the ego has always had this opportunity to claim, I am this, right? I am ugly, I am beautiful, I am loud, I am shy. I am introvert, I am extrovert, right? The ego loves to claim something as what I am. So in your experience as a person, has the ego been able to claim, I am this? Fill in this with anything specific. And the answer, yes, many times. There has been, I am a college student. I am a bluegrass fan. I am a good pet owner. I am lonely. I am always able to find the positive side of things. I am a professional. I am a mother. I am a spiritual teacher. I can't write all of the specific ego definitions there have been. And then the next inquiry that came up was this, and is the ego satisfied? Look carefully. Is the ego still craving to be something? Now, this is an incredible inquiry. The first thing asked is, has the ego ever claimed to be something? And I looked over the history of my life briefly. I mean, we even saw, I'm a college student, right? So I was looking, yes, I've been this and this and this. The ego has been able to claim all of these things. So it's great. So it's primary craving. The ego's primary craving is to say, I am this. And in just this one lifetime, the ego has said, I am this thing so many times we can't even write all of the definitions that it's had. I mean, it has had what it wants most so much. Is it satisfied now? And the answer? No, it's not satisfied. the ego still wants to be something. That craving is insatiable. The ego wants to be even uninterested in thoughts. The ego wants to claim that, right? The ego is the one that wants enlightenment, right? The ego wants to be seen as loving. The ego, no, the ego is not done. The ego is never done. So by far, the primary craving of the ego is identification with anything. It doesn't care if it's identification with stupid or smart, with loving or cruel, with beautiful or ugly. It doesn't care. It wants to identify. So that's important to know. That's important just to be aware of. Because that's another place that we can either rest, accept, and trust, or if that pure awareness has risen into consciousness and we can just look at it until it melts like the Wicked Witch of the West, we can look at it. So when the thought arises in the mind, geez, why did I do that? I'm so stupid. Just look at it. Right? I know I don't want these identifications anymore. Or even, look what I achieved. I'm so smart. The same thing. It's actually the same thing. Just look at it. Let it melt like the Wicked Witch of the West. Realize I do not want this ego identification anymore. It doesn't matter whether it's what we call a positive identification or a negative identification. Both are the dark side. Right? Both are the dark side. What's happening now is that I am spiritually mature enough that I'm going beyond not wanting pain as my primary goal. I think most of us, when we start this spiritual path, one of the first things we look at is that we don't want pain. At some point, we transcend pain. And yet the ego sense is still here. And then that's where our awareness goes to, I don't want the ego sense. I want to be free of even being a happy person. I want to be free of this limited nature itself. And in fact, even then, you could say another subtle pain arises just whenever you start becoming interested in yourself as a person. It's a very subtle pain. It's not like the suffering that occurred before. But as soon as you start thinking of yourself as a person, there's this subtle suffering there enough to wake you up from it and to cause you to let whatever thoughts you were having about the type of person you are go. Paul says, Regina, what part does laughter play in this scenario? To me, laughter is natural. I think I laugh a lot. You know, laughter happens. See, it just happened. Laughter happens. Laughter isn't anything that needs to be forced. Laughter happens. As we let go of that which would block us, block our joy, laughter happens. Yeah, it just happens. And it happens more for some personalities than other. You know, the personalities are different, and that's okay. Flowers are different. Some personalities laugh a lot. Some personalities cry a lot. Some personalities are very devotional. You say something beautiful, they cry, right? They cry a lot, but it's a beautiful, I'm touched type of cry. Some personalities are quiet, and they just have this sense of contentment, but there's not a lot of laughter, not a lot of crying. That's all okay. You know, that's all perfect. All right, my time is up for now, so I am going to go. Again, the last thing we were just looking at is noticing that the ego craves to say, I am this. And just noticing that within ourselves whenever the ego is doing it. and learning to let go of that too, no matter what the this is, learning to let go of that too, so that we can transcend the ego sense. All right, I'll see you guys in a couple hours for the contemplation, or Wednesday for the guiding light, whichever you will be at. Bye.
Thank you so much, Regina.